Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jay Farrow. Thank you for joining me on Atlanta Technology Leaders. Very excited. It's our October broadcast, and in the Halloween spirit, I have my good friend, John Trainer. in the studio. I'm very excited. Thanks to Band of Coders for putting this together. I also have Bobby John. My special guest is a good friend of mine. Full disclosure, he's my partner in crime, and we're going to do our best to avoid making this a comedy routine and talk about actually important issues, although I'm pretty sure our natural personalities will come out. John is Vice President and CIO of Aaron's, an Atlanta-based specialty retailer. I think most of you probably know Aaron's. They're all over the place because they have 2,100 stores with over $3 billion, or nearly $3 billion in revenue. John's been there a number of years, is a graduate of Georgia Tech, so I won't hold that against him, but since they're here in the city and John's a pretty smart guy, I have to say that he's one of my favorite tech grads. But John, thanks for being in the studio today.
My pleasure. I think that's a short list of your favorite tech
grads. It is, but you're right at the top there, buddy.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing that pops in, much like with ACS, the first thing that pops into the mind of someone listening to this broadcast is CIO, technology, retail. I mean, yeah, I guess they're connecting computers, but you guys are doing some pretty amazing things. Talk a little bit about Aaron's. Aaron's been around for a while. It's a great business. I know because you in the past have been very, very generous with the American Cancer Society. As a matter of fact, presented us with a very large check not too long ago, and we're very, very thankful for that. So I got to see a little bit of the culture, but talk about Aaron's and how IT fits.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, any company really needs some kind of technology to be effective, but what we're seeing is in retail, it is much, much more competitive. That, you know, it is so difficult now to drive consumers to make a purchasing decision. And so over the years, we're a 59-year-old and a 60-year-old company, and technology was not a big part of the company a number of years ago, and it really didn't need to be, frankly. It was truly a cost center back then, and you spent as little as you could on it. But what we're seeing now is in every aspect of the business, we can apply some technology to gain some kind of advantage. Mm-hmm. In some places, we're a little bit ahead, and in some places, we're a little bit behind, but what we're seeing is where we do apply it and apply it properly, we just get great results. Mm-hmm. And it's all about getting it easier for our associates to serve customers and using technology to do that.
You know, tell me a little bit about it. Thank you for that. I tell me a little bit about some of those victories or some of those initiatives. Because what I heard you say, and I love it, is that, hey, it's more about being a it's more than just being a cost center. It's more than just about driving costs down, but it's about enabling and growing revenue and putting the power in the hands of your associates.
Yeah, that's right. So one thing we believe at Aaron's is we work really hard in our transaction to make sure our customers get to ownership. That mm-hmm. that is something that we do differently in the market, and it's what we think is one of our competitive advantages. And so we align our technology around how to do that. I'm very happy to say that just about a week ago, we finished the deployment of a retirement of our legacy store system, which was 25 years old, which Bobby John sitting right here wasn't born yet, I'm sure. we retired that application, and that application existed before the internet did. So if you can think about how hard it was for us to innovate, by implementing that new technology that helped our store serve customers better, we know what they need more quickly. When we want to communicate with them, we want to help to get them to ownership. We have the tools that we're able to do that finally. And what's cool is we now have a platform to innovate on. And while we've been deploying it, we've been continually innovating, but it's just the start. I mean, we are just beginning to do that.
So you have a platform now for innovation and future innovation, obviously more rapid. What did you learn? I'm curious. What did you learn from between store number – I'm sure the list is long – but between store number one – in store number 2,100 in deploying this? How much change did the application go through or the solution go through? And what maybe do you wish you had known back then?
I probably should go back to store like negative one, which is when I got to Aaron's in 1999, this same application was attempted to be rolled out. And it was one of the reasons why I came. It was failing and it almost put the company out of business.
Oh, wow.
And so I got the great experience of being able to go around to most of the 193 stores that had the software. We only had 450 stores back then, but it was killing those stores. And I got to roll them back to what was now our legacy system that we just killed off. And I learned so much. It was a great opportunity because I learned so much about our operations. But I learned there what we could and what we couldn't do in how we implemented the store system. So, I kind of had I was building up the ammo that we were going to be then firing the next few years to learn what we could and couldn't change. And it took us a little while to get there. Just the appetite wasn't there. But so some things we learned. One thing I learned is go in with a full appreciation of how big it is. We did not go in with an appreciation of how big of a project this was going to be. It literally touches every single aspect of the company. There's not one part of the company that it doesn't interact with. And so I don't think we had a full appreciation of that. And so that meant we didn't put the right resources initially on it. And there was a period of time where we just were starving for resources. The team was working their rear ends off and they were doing incredible things, but we weren't getting the traction that we wanted to get. And it wasn't until our new CEO came in where he recognized that almost immediately. And he said, you've got the resources you need to get it accomplished. And that was a couple years ago. And once we put the gas down, the team just tore it up and did incredible things. So that's a huge thing to learn.
Well, and I've had the privilege to meet a number of your team members, and I can certainly speak to the quality. You have a great team over there, and they're terrific.
Yeah, I like them. Good people.
Yeah, I mean, guys like you and I, we have to hire a good team because God knows we can't do it on our own steam.
Amen, brother.
You don't want it to be the Jay Farrow Show because that would be a sad state. So when you roll when you roll the application back, so you come in, obviously a couple hundred stores nearly are on this, quote, new application in 99, and they're like, oh my God, it's killing us. And you're like, all right, we're going to go back to the legacy application. I'm sure that built some credibility with people like, okay, thank you, for bringing us back to at least what we know. How did you rebuild that credibility? Because suddenly you're going to turn around and say, oh, by the way, you know that thing that you hated? We're going to deploy it again.
Yeah,
I promise
that's right.
It's going to go right this time.
Yeah. The credibility that we built as a team, right, is it all emanates from our knowledge of how our operations and our stores work. And so I feel when I'm in a meeting with divisional vice presidents or region managers, and this is true for a lot of people on my team, I am an equal citizen when it comes to talking about how our stores operate because we spend as much time as we can in our stores, and that's how you learn these things. So I think the credibility emanates from when somebody's is talking in operational jargon, mm-hmm, and you're hanging in there and you understand it and you maybe even have some insight into what they're talking about. That's where that credibility comes from. But at the end of the day, it all comes from deliverables. And over the course of the 2000s, we had to deliver on some critical things. And we're looked at in the company as an organization that can deliver. If there's something that needs to be done, they can ask us to do it, and we will get it done.
Oh, by the way, you were growing exponentially at that time.
Just keeping up with that. I mean, just we were growing, 100 stores, 120 stores a year, and just deploying the new stores. That alone was a lot. And mm-hmm, and we had some in between states between killing off legacy and the new store system that were some good innovations. But there's a lot going on.
Well, speaking of that, I imagine you brought some new tools, new methodologies, new processes to Aaron's over the years. And I know that you have implemented Agile, or at least some form of Agile. I wish I could say that I've implemented Agile. I've implemented pieces of Agile.
Yeah, yeah.
More of a water scrum a fall Joel.
Yeah.
And we're getting there, right? So tell me how's that journey been? How'd you start? Where are you? How's it been?
Yeah. Agile. So I've said this before about why I'm in technology, but it also applies to Agile at Aaron's. But there's rapper Bubba Sparks, who you may know because of his Georgia background, even though he's from LaGrange. But and he has a line that says, "I didn't choose Ryman; Ryman chose me."
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't think we chose Agile. I think the company chose Agile because the nature of Agile is a high degree of collaboration, a high degree of flexibility, just-in-time business value when it makes sense. And I think it maps really well to how our operational leaders think. And so Agile just really emanated from the way we run business. And so now, when we were doing the predecessor to what we do now, it was really more just ad hoc, not planning. It wasn't really Agile. And we started saying, you know, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way to run the business. And so I'd say right around 2007 is when we dedicated to saying, let's really explore Scrum and just pick a methodology. It might not have been the right one, but it was an Agile methodology. We picked it, and man, were we horrible at it for a year. I mean, we were horrible.
Yeah.
But we built this little microcosm that then was a seed that started to be spread throughout the organization. And now, I'm not going to say I have an Agile organization, that we do Agile all throughout, but we want to. And so everything we look at when we organize, we say, how can we do this with the Agile mindset? And I don't mean the not planning mindset and fly by the seat of your pants. I mean, how can we value people over processes? How can we foster collaboration and understanding and engagement? And those are the key pieces that I think we like to emphasize.
Well, you know, you hit on something, and you said the company chose Agile because the culture was moving that way, that dedication to collaboration, communication. That didn't happen magically. Obviously, they saw you as a collaborator, and you got some of that credibility by learning the business to where you became an equal, like you said, and I even wrote it down here, you became an equal citizen, which I love. I love that comment where you're not just the IT guy who happens to kind of know. You actually understand. You're a business person who happens to specialize in IT. I mean, is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said when they figure out that I'm no good as being a CIO, I hope they offer me a GM position. I run a store, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
that, your fallback.
My fallback is you know, I'm good enough where they go, yeah, this guy knows enough operations that maybe he could run a store. And so, you know, I think if I think if you're just constantly striving to understand and you speak externally less technology and more rest of the business, then I think that's such a welcome change from what you typically see with technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Bobby, do you have a question?
Yeah, and John, so with that understanding of the store, I'm always wondering, with an organization like yours and all the challenges in retail, how do you decide when you're approaching technology, I'm going to take this off the shelf that's available to everyone else, or I'm going to custom build something because it's going to differentiate me from everyone else? And we know, like, the Amazons of the world, they chose to do some stuff different, and that's what kind of put them on the map. And you probably bump into those challenges or questions every day.
Yeah, I think when we make that decision, a great example is our store system. So everybody will tell you, look, go to Radiant, they've got a POS. Go to NCR, they've got a POS. And they do. But they don't have a leasing point of sale system that also does a lot of inventory management and a CRM baked into it. And that's what our store system does. And that's why we call it that, not a point of sale. So when we made that evaluation, we looked, and there are some things out there. But even within our industry, we lease differently than everybody else does. Our focus is on getting customers to ownership and not maximizing the value of inventory. And so little nuances like that, that's when we make a decision to do something differently. Now, I'm not going to build my own ERP package. I'm not going to build my own payroll system. I'm just not going to do that. And so things where we're not getting some specific competitive advantage or where we don't differ significantly, we need to go buy that and integrate it and make it work well.
Right. You know, you and I get bombarded daily, and I'm sure Bobby and everybody else in the studio here gets – we hear about all the different forces that are out there. Social, mobile, cloud, analytics, and we can't open an email without hearing some of these. What are some of the newer technologies, the forces that are out there that are kind of changing the way that we do things as CIOs? What are the ones that are exciting you? When you read them and you learn more about them, what's going, yeah, I'd like to find out more about that.
Yeah, I am right now so excited with what we're seeing with predictive analytics.
Yeah.
I mean, just so excited. So now that we've retired our legacy system and we have our new store system called Customer Core, it's not just a front end. There's a data element and making our data better and more well organized. And now that we have that available to us, we're doing some really cool things in predictive analytics where we're looking at what makes customers successful. And we can, it is really neat where we can now predict this customer is going to obtain ownership to 98th percentile of assurance. And then when we find the ones that 98% of the time are not going to, then the conversation is, what do we need to change? How do we need to cater better to that customer to get them to ownership? And knowing that all the way down to an agreement level is so cool. We were looking at one just recently, and I called the customer accounts manager at the store and say, tell me about this customer. I just want to know about this customer. And I didn't tell him why I wanted to know about that customer. And it was just cool to hear, because when you look at this customer, there are no telltale signs that it's not going to be successful. But if we trust these analytics and we've backtested and it's dead on, this customer is not going to be successful. And I want to know, I just wanted to hear from the store what the impression was and how they were interacting with the customer. It was pretty cool.
That's very cool, because then you could probably design mitigation strategies.
Totally.
Where you're nipping it in the bud. We're doing very similar things where we have volunteers that for years have given, right? Or they've been a team captain for an event, or they've hosted an event. And they're our lifeblood, right? Where, I mean, we have obviously a large employee staff, but we can't do anything without our volunteers. They're obviously the fuel behind what we do. And so we're just now getting to the point where we're very excited about looking at those patterns and trends of, well, why did they stop volunteering with us? Was it a life change? And looking at that and identifying it earlier and earlier in their relationship with us. Sounds like you're obviously a little bit ahead of where we are, but I'm very excited about the same sort of dynamic. So
it's almost like magic. All good technology is hard to distinguish from magic, right? I think it's Sagan or somebody said.
Well, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. So, you know, you went into your job, and in the last few years, you clearly know what predictive analytics are. I mean, you understand inherently, based on your background and experience, what that would do for the organization. Was that something the folks at Aaron's knew about and they just asked for? Or was it like many companies where they didn't even know the art of the possible and you kind of brought them the idea and they said, well, wait a minute, we didn't even know we could do that? Or both?
I think it was both. Yeah. I think there were really three forces that caused that. Yeah. One, I've been a believer for a while, but frankly have not been as vocal as I should be, because from a prioritization perspective, we needed to retire that legacy system more than anything else. And I didn't want to get diverted from that. Our president, who's our president as of this past April, he's a strong believer. So he's not a technology person, but he's a pretty bright guy and gets it. And so Steve has been pushing for that. And then it just so happened that we acquired a company back in April that uses predictive analytics to a phenomenal degree. And we have learned so much from them. They're just incredible partners to understand that. And so those three forces combining have made it made it work really well.
I think one of the most exciting things as an IT leader of any level is when you bring solutions like that to the quote business, and I know we both don't look at it that way, but to your non-IT colleagues, and you watch their eyes light up, it is like magic at times. I mean, when they're looking and going, what do you mean I can ask it another question? Or what do you mean I have that answer in 2 seconds versus 3 hours?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, because you begin to see their eyes open and their wheels turning about just what they could do with that day to day and how much value they can drive for the organization through this new power that they have.
Yeah, well, you know, I came in this morning and the analytics guy who reports to the president, we officially did that. We had a strategy and analytics person go just directly to the president and not within IT. Mm-hmm. They were sitting there and they were kind of bemoaning the fact that he has a small team, and we have, just from the conversations we had yesterday about this one customer, we have so many things we want to do, and that's the toughest part, right? There's just so many opportunities.
Prioritization, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the biggest challenge, I think.
Amen.
Because the list goes on and on, and there's so many good ideas in an organization, but it's all about putting in that methodology to make the best decisions.
Yep.
You know, any other secrets? I mean, it sounds like you've built a tremendous amount of credibility. Congratulations on the deployment. I forgot to say that earlier. That's just a huge, I mean, look, 2,100 stores and retiring a 25-year-old legacy system. Congratulations to you and your team.
Thanks.
On that. What other behaviors or leadership qualities have you taken to build credibility within your organization? What advice would you have to the up-and-coming CIO or IT leader? They're new in their job. Maybe they're fighting some legacy mindset or legacy technologies. How, you know, what advice do you give them?
So I think it all starts with believing. I think you have to believe that you can do something great. And I don't think I've done many great things yet, but I still believe I can, right? And so
I think you're underselling yourself just a little bit, well, which is a great quality.
You have to believe that you can, and then if you believe you can and you have that out there, I've got one director that works for me that he is phenomenal, but he does a great job of pointing out to me when I'm being overly optimistic, and he and I balance each other really well, right?
It's funny how that chief reality officer that works for you.
Yeah, and he's great because, you know, I push him, I think, to do some things that he's uncomfortable doing, and he reins me back when I'm being an idiot, and so but I don't want to give that up. I'm okay with being this optimistic idiot. And you know, my CFO was giving me a hard time around review time about, well, you think anything can get done because obviously it's hearing your goals and it's going to nail you. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But I'd rather think that way than not think that way. So
agreed.
You know, I think that is – so that belief. And then back that belief up with knowing as much as you can. And I don't mean knowing as much as you can in technology. I'm a voracious reader. I listen to podcasts like crazy. Technology ones about technology that I'll never work in ever because I don't do that anymore. But I want to know what's going on. And then also history. You know, I want to listen to the entire History of Rome podcast series because it tells me so much about business in the context of history. And I think that belief backed up by knowing more and more and more and thriving to know more is the way to do it.
I think it was, what was it, Gandhi that says, live like you'll die tomorrow, but learn like you'll live forever.
Nice.
Which I love that saying because I think it keeps us sharp. And I had the pleasure of meeting a doctor who is a practicing doctor, a clinician, who is in his late 80s. Wow. But you would never know it because he stayed healthy, mentally sharp, was still on top of the latest trends. And I said, how do you keep doing it? What's the secret? He goes, I've never stopped learning. Medicine still excites me in my 80s like it did when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm that way. God willing, I hope I live that long. But first and foremost, but that's powerful stuff. You also have great taste in music because you and I both listen to hip-hop.
Yes.
And we compare our...
It's actually
a true story. Lisa LaRocque, who's staring at me like I'm making that up, and it's true, but we do.
I call myself a connoisseur of hip-hop. So I don't just listen to it. I'm a connoisseur of hip-hop.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lisa's over here calling my bluff, but I think she believes me now. But
no, I said I dance to it.
Oh, you dance to it. She dances to hip-hop. All right. Well, that I believe, actually. All right, so we've talked about a lot of the good things. We've talked about a lot of success. You've built credibility. You've implemented a huge system, which is transformative for Aaron's. It sets you up really nicely for obviously more rapid innovation. You've used agile methodologies or are rapidly growing your maturity in that scale, predictive analytics. What's went wrong?
Oh God!
We're going to dedicate.
How long is this?
Oh, we can go all day.
We need another session.
The top two or three things that you look back in the last, 3 to 5 years or whatever time frame, and say, "Man, that was a boneheaded decision."
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing I don't do well, and that's work-life balance. So that's more of a personal thing. So I absolutely need to get better at that, and that's just deciding you're going to do it because just like IT projects. My work is always going to be there, and I'm never going to have a day where I'm finished. You know, there just won't be that day. So it's all about how do you make the right amount of time and make sure you're doing the right thing. So I'd say from a failure perspective, I haven't done that as well as I'd like to, and I'm trying to constantly get better at doing that. So that's one. I think that not understanding when I'm being overly optimistic and not understanding when I'm under-resourcing something or when I'm taking a shortcut that'll eventually be a problem later on, I think that is something that I really need to do better on. I mean, this big project was a great example of that. I totally learned a lot from that. And not to mention, other projects, but I'm sure I'll repeat it, but hopefully not as bad. And it comes from that, your strengths of optimism is your biggest derailer, is optimism. So, I think getting the tough decisions done quicker, that I need to move on more. So when there's something tough, you need to just do it. And and I think that is something that, that I've learned in a few cases, you know, in the past few years being a CIO.
But you continue to grow, and I think we all struggle with that. God knows I struggle with work-life balance, and you and I are the same in the sense that we're high energy, we're type A personalities, we want to give, we love our sons, and we, you know, mm-hmm. love our families and yep. all of that stuff. So we'll take it on the chin with less sleep. And all of those things just to try to please people, but you always end up letting something fall. So it's a never-ending battle. You just try to get a little bit better every day. And the others, I think as leaders, we always face that. You know, sometimes you look at a big issue, you look at a big problem, and I have found myself looking at it saying, man, you know, I'm trying to boil the ocean, and that is a big ocean. But it's not getting any bigger or smaller if I stare at it.
Yep.
Problems don't get better with that, you know, with admiration. So I think that's good advice for everyone. You know, I want to go back to something you mentioned. You said you were a relentless or an endless optimist, which I love. But I think that's an important quality as a leader. But you have somebody that reports to you, a director, that basically reins you in, and you've given permission to call BS and say,
oh, yeah.
Hey, boss, yeah, let's think that through for a second.
I'm not sure that I gave him permission.
he took permission.
I'll put it this way. He's a Georgia grad.
There
so,
we go.
You know,
well, then he has an innate delusions of grandeur, right? Isn't
yeah,
that
right,
what it is?
Right. And, you know, I didn't give him permission, but it's a great interaction. And frankly, you look at all the people that work on my team, and almost all of them in some way compensate for some weakness I have, right? Like, I'm horrible with administrative tasks, like absolutely horrible, and I'm terrible at it. And so there are rules about how you interact with me on administrative tasks that, you know, you set something on my desk, I assume you just threw it away because I will never be able to handle that. I'll put it somewhere else and it'll be disappeared in my mind. So I think it's all about surrounding you with people that are going to compliment what you don't do well. And I think I compliment a lot of people and what they don't do well and, you know.
It goes back to diversity, isn't it? You never want to surround yourself. Yeah. God knows we don't want to surround ourselves with people like us because, you know, the company ACS and Aaron's probably would have fallen off the rails years ago. But shoring up your weaknesses. And I have a vice president, my vice president of IT governance that reports to me, a guy named Sean Hunt, and I'll give him props. But I call him my chief devil's advocate officer because he's the guy that is the realist. As we're all sitting around the table talking about how great these technology projects are going to be, and man, this is going to be great when. I think we can get that done in 3 months, man. What is that, like 3 months, guys, plus minus what, 3 months? And he's going,
yeah.
I don't want to be the one guy that says no, but have you thought about this, this, this? And we're all going, dang it.
Yeah.
All right, 6 months. 6 months.
We have this one senior project manager, and I hate hearing her talk because she dashes all of my hopes and dreams. But any critical project, I want her there from the start because she just keeps us all grounded. And she asks questions that you're like, oh, that was a horrible question. And you're so right.
And I hate that you're right.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, she's just phenomenal like that. And I have to have it, but it's painful to talk to her because it's contrary to how I'm wired, you know?
You get upset. You're like, dang you for being right.
Yeah.
I hate it.
And I love her to death for it because of what she does for the organization, you know?
Well, I mean, together we're stronger that way. And yes, I'm very, very thankful because sometimes they just save you from your own good intentions and from stepping in. Bobby, do you have a quick go ahead?
Are they ever wrong? You're
Yeah. I mean,
you have to say
great question.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
That's faster.
That's a great question. So it is. It's not a we can go faster. It's more we're willing to not do this or that, and we're all okay with it, and we've gotten the collaboration to everybody agree that we're okay with it. So I think that's the key. And there have been a number of times where I'll enter a project that is being run really well, and I'll ask some pretty stupid questions, and I clear out a million roadblocks just by simplifying it. So that optimism helps to simplify it, and there have been a number of times where that has helped. And I think it's a balance, you know?
It is, and I think in our positions, and you hit the nail on the head, sometimes we have a perspective maybe that they don't have. I mean, we're, you know, we see a little bit more of the business. We understand what our authority is and how we can clear out some of those roadblocks. their intent is always the
of
best.
Of course, yeah.
But, you know, what we see as a roadblock and what our teammates tend to see as roadblocks sometimes are very different things. You and I live in a city that has an amazing IT community. We brag on it all the time because it's true. And we have a group of CIOs and, you know, underwriters and vendor partners and all sorts of things that interact on a regular basis. You know, that's how you and I met years ago. And I suckered you into joining me on some things. And you, God bless you. I don't know. I mean, you talk
optimist,
about decisions
optimist.
You regret. I mean, there's the optimist. He's like, speaking of bad decisions, Jay. The GCLA, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association, we've grown quite a bit. I'm the chair. You're the membership chair. And under your leadership, we've grown a ton in the last, you know, 18 months. Tell me about what the GCLA means to you, what it's done for you, what you like about it, and I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, just to be clear, the GCLA has grown under the leadership of Frank and Lisa and Kelly and Tracy before Lisa.
I agree with
and
you.
And very little of it, other than maybe being on a conference call here and there was related to me. You know, we are you almost feel bad for CIOs in other cities because you hear there's this weird, like, I think they're more nerds. Like, they're, you know, the extroverts are the ones that look at your shoes, right? Not their own.
Right.
And I think we just have a very good group of people who are extroverts, willing to share.
Yeah.
A little joke grenade there. You come out, finally got it. Yeah.
It was like a 5 second
threw it and then boom.
Listen, I went to Georgia. Yeah. Could you just cut me some slack? I
mean, some people are going to turn this off. And then like minutes later, they're going to start
like,
laughing.
Oh,
about
man, that trainer guy is
but,
funny.
Yeah, guy, he's hilarious. So we have all these great extroverts who are willing to share. And, you know, great example, Lee Crump at Rollins.
One of our favorites.
Oh, huge. And he's taken the time to just unload a ton of brilliant ideas to me when I was a year and a half into being CIO. And I'm like, what do I do in this and this? And there are practices that I've picked up since then. And he didn't have to do that. And I think he even bought lunch. I mean, it was like he did not need to do that. And he spent the time to do that. And we have that over and over in the city and in the state of Georgia. And I just think we're blessed because of it. I don't know why it is, but it's pretty cool. And I love it.
It's a great organization. Now, I also have to say, and I'm going to save the best for last, I have to congratulate you. You are a finalist in the global category for CIO of the Year. So congratulations.
Thank
well
you.
Deserved.
Thank you.
Well deserved. And I know if and when you win, I'm looking forward to your acceptance speech.
The word Jay might enter there.
I hope it doesn't, but I know I can. So anyway, the GCLA is one of those organizations, and I agree with you that I'm going to steal shamelessly because you just said it. I feel bad for them too. You go to cities like Dallas, you go to Minneapolis, you go to these other cities, and you talk about what we have, and it's almost, well, what do you mean you don't have that? What do you mean you can't call the CIO down the street and ask his or her opinion? We have some tremendous people, tremendous CIOs, and tremendous leaders. But what's cool is that, to me, is that at all levels, and even with vendor partners, there's this great collaboration and camaraderie. It's very, very, very cool. Speaking of the GCLA, we've already talked a lot about it. At least I'm making sure I hit all these points. Otherwise, Lisa's going to stab me with her pen, and I don't want that to happen.
She can get pretty rough.
She does. She'll cut me. She'll come at me like, I mean, it's horrific. 113 members strong right now.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It's very exciting, and so
and great members. Like, and you walk through the list, and it is the coolest people. So yeah, it's great.
Oh, we're the least impressive group.
Oh,
the guys on that group, right?
Well,
there.
We were in early, so that's the trick.
I know. I mean, I don't know if I could make it now. They'd be like, right on the border.
Yeah,
not so sure. But guys like Lee Crump and you know is a perfect example of a great CIO here in town that is a shameless sharer. I mean, he absolutely will answer the phone, respond. I got a dumb question. He's like, not a dumb question. I had that same question. Here's what I learned. And, oh, by the way, here's the document we used.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's that kind of sharing. So the membership requirements are those CIOs who work for a Georgia-based organization that are at least $100 million in revenue. Of course, this October 31st on Halloween is our 16th annual Georgia CIO of the Year Awards. 7 a.m. at the Cobb Galleria Center. It's going to have over 1,000 people. It's amazing how that event has grown. Last year was off the hook. It was insane. It was easily one of the best events in the entire city. We're going to honor 20 CIO Award finalists and reveal the winners. We're going to announce the 2014 Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. Very excited about that. George Conradus, the chairman of Akamai, is going to be our keynote. And that guy's done some pretty amazing things in his career. So I'm very, very excited, and as I know you are. Attendance is limited to tables of 10. Secure your spot by reserving a table before it sells out. Head to georgiacio.org/awards. Bobby, any final questions from my man, John?
No, I'm good. That was great.
Bobby is the most dangerous underwriter in the business right there.
Is that right?
Oh, my gosh. He looks like calm and collected. He'll come at you like a spider monkey. Just set him up the wrong way. He'll kill you with the wrong end of the microphone. He'll absolutely do it. Now, Bobby, thank you very much for your generosity. Thanks to Band of Coders.
Absolutely. My
appreciate,
pleasure.
Appreciate you putting up with me for 30, 40 minutes. Thank you to my friends at Business Radio X. I mean, I cannot believe that you guys give me the microphone once a month. It's really ridiculous.
Oh, it's our pleasure, man. We love it when you come by.
Man, you're awesome. And John, special thanks to you. John Traynor, my good, good friend, best CIO in town.
And, hey, now, come
you
on.
Know,
it's
I was
you.
Gonna, No. Best
not
CIO in town.
On that one. It's you.
And my partner in crime, thanks for taking the time, man. I know you're busy.
Hey, thank you.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.